theme to start the hour, and looking through patient eyes, and Kate Renata there with What You Need. It's 14 minutes past 8, the full English breakfast show. Are you ready for your astrophysics lesson?
Go ahead. I think I know what you're going to say.
Imagine the energy of 8 suns released into an instant.
Oh, no, that wasn't what I was thinking of.
What were you thinking of?
Oh, I've got something else about being able to transport yourself into... Ooh. Anyway, go ahead.
Teleportation. Well, this is the gravitational shockwave that's spread out from the biggest merger yet observed between two black holes. Is your favourite subject, isn't it?
I stop paying attention after a while.
The signal from the events travelled for some 7 billion years to reach Earth, but was still sufficiently strong to rattle laser detectors in the United States and Italy in May last year. It took a long time to get here. Like the 68 bus. Researchers say the colliding black holes produced a single entity with a mass 142 times of that of our sun. This is quite a deal, actually. Science has long traced the presence of black holes on the sky that are quite a bit smaller or even very much larger, but the new observation inaugurates a novel class of so-called intermediate-sized black hole in the range of 100 to 1,000 suns or solar masses. Now, the analysis is the latest to come out of the International LIGO Virgo collaboration, which operates 3 super sensitive gravitational wave detection systems in America and Europe. So here you go.
Okay.
Now remember this.
Mm-hmm.
A black hole is a region of space where matter has collapsed in on itself.
Right.
The gravitational pull is so strong that nothing, not even event light, can escape. Now, black holes will emerge from the explosive demise of certain large stars, but some are truly gargantuan and are billions of times the mass of the sun. How these monsters found a galaxy centres formed is unknown. Black holes are detected from the way they influence their surroundings. They produce observable gravitational waves as they spiral into each other. The collaboration's laser interferometer instruments listen for the vibrations in space-time that are generated by truly cataclysmic cosmic events. And on the 21st of May last year, they were all triggered by a sharp signal lasting just 1/10 of a second. Computer algorithms determined the source to be the end stage moments of 2 inspiraling black holes, one with a mass 66 times of that of our sun, and the other with 85 solar masses. Professor Nelson Christensen from the Côte d'Azur Observatory in France said it's astounding, really. This signal propagated for 7 billion years, so the event happened just before half time in the universe, and that's mechanically moved our detectors here on Earth.
What's half time in the universe?
I don't know, but the score was still 0-0 at that point. Anyway, good morning to Professor Nelson Christensen.
Good morning.
From the Côte d'Azur Observatory, if you're listening. It'd be lovely if you joined us for a chat one morning.
Why not? Did you see the full moon last night?
Was it last night?
It was last night, and apparently last night's full moon was a wake-up call with dramatic energy bringing change and empowerment, a shining light on awakening you to self-mastery. It will ask you to take responsibility for your own life, free yourself from the chains of victimhood and blame, and take back your power and step into the light. However, do check in with your ego and ensure that you don't overstep boundaries so as not to lose valuable people in your life.
I'll remember that. There goes the supernova. Time for more tricky questions as Sarah tries to trip me up.
No. You mentioned the 1980s.
It was a hat trick yesterday, wasn't it?
It was.
It was two and a half.
Question number one. Which 80s band members were named Simon, Nick, John, Andy and Roger?
The Wombles. Duran Duran.
Told you it was easy. Question number two. Frank Zappa sang Valley Girl with the help of his daughter. What is her name?
Moon Unit.
Well done. And finally, on this day in 1986, the top of the English charts was the Communards with Don't Leave Me This Way at number one.
Thelma Houston.
Number two, was Nick Berry, who came round to my place. Every loser wins.
Oh.
Yeah, EastEnders, Nick Berry.
Year, wasn't he used to come round to your place.
He came round once to do a programme. I told you this before. Anyway.
No, you haven't. You're a name dropper of the worst kind you are. Yeah?
And finally, Boris Gardner was at number three with which song?
I Want to Wake Up With You.
Well done. I told you it was easy. Could have made you play Nick Berry, but...
Well, Boris Gardner is much better, to be quite honest with you.
Oh, it's nice.
Okay.
Nice and easy. Cool as a cucumber.
Riviera Radio. Business.
Top of the morning to you.
Good morning.
What's your favourite biscuit?
Favourite biscuit? Chocolate hobnob.
chocolate hobnob.
Oh my God, it's the best biscuit in the world.
Plain chocolate or milk chocolate?
Milk chocolate. Sarah, I don't think they do a plain chocolate version.
Is that on the list?
That's
Sarah?
Not on the list, no.
Are you joking? Is this a list of biscuits? Oh, it's the king of biscuits. Are you kidding? What's top of the list?
I do quite like hobnobs, but I'm pretty sure they do a plain chocolate version.
Oh, not for me. What is top of the list?
Well, it's all about your character traits, you see. So you might be party rings. Do you like party rings?
No.
Revolting. Garibaldi's?
I haven't had them for about 20 years. So,
well, you're sophisticated if you like Garibaldi's.
If you had to have another biscuit apart from a hobnob, what would it be?
Chocolate digestive.
Milk or dark?
Milk.
Predictable. You're so predictable.
Is that what it is?
Well, that's why I like dark chocolate digestive, so I'm predictable as well. Ugh. Well, that's why we're in the business of talking about money, because it's just so predictable, isn't it?
It's not that predictable, it has to be said, although equity markets did rise both in Europe and the United States yesterday. This relentless rally in risk assets continues, supported, of course, by dovish policymakers that are providing a flood of liquidity. Investor demand for techies back a little bit yesterday, seeking out some value in sectors that have not been loved for some time, automakers, utilities. Equities pushed higher despite data showing US companies added fewer jobs than forecast in August as we head towards, of course, the all-important non-farm payroll number on Friday. I think we should acknowledge there's still plenty of risk out there could destabilize sentiment. US election, some signs of polls are tightening a little bit there, so it's going to be an interesting few weeks as we go through the campaign. COVID, of course, very important. Watch those medical numbers. Is a second phase likely to play out? US-China rivalry. The big question over whether companies can really achieve the earnings expectations for 2021. So I don't think it's any time to be complacent. Investors should be looking at protecting their gains and diversifying some of those risks. But markets say powering ahead. Stocks 50 in Europe rose 1.8% yesterday. S&P was up 1.5%. NASDAQ was up 1%. Looks like we're going to add to those gains at the start on the European bourses this morning, where we're currently calling the FTSE up 18 points. DAX over in Frankfurt up 84 points. CAC 40 in Paris up 30 points.
Is Barclays in the business of predicting the outcome of the US election or not?
Not really, no. It's too close to call would be the measures in place. But listen, the electoral map still looks very difficult for President Trump. You've got domestic issues playing out, of course. You've got concerns around the economy and the managing of COVID. So there's lots for President Trump to overcome, it would appear, at this stage. But, of course, he defied the doubters in 2016. So writing off President Trump can be at your peril.
Well, it's all about the electoral college and not the popular votes in the states, of course, and several key swing states could make the difference. And the spread of the electoral college votes, for example, big states like California and Texas proportionally have much less say than some of the smaller states.
Yeah, so the ones really to watch out for, the so-called swing states, I suppose. President Trump, remember, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Michigan, these are big states that he'll need to win. He won them by less than 1% last time out. He'll need to carry them once again. Some of the traditional states, if you look at Arizona, for example, traditionally Republican-leaning, have still got him in the win column for that state, but it's been moving against them. And, of course, Florida, older population there, particularly impacted by COVID-19, will that impact their voting decisions as well? And of course, this big row over voting and postal ballots. So it's going to be a very interesting process. But if you look at the electoral map, as I say, some big obstacles to overcome if President Trump is to be re-elected.
Well, the big question is, if he loses, will he go quietly as well?
Well, the biggest risk for markets is a contested election. There's no doubt about that. That would certainly be negative for markets. So I think if you were to see President Trump or indeed the Democratic rival Joe Biden win and a conclusive win, then that would be certainly seen as acceptable by markets. The worst outcome, I'd say, is some sort of contested election.
After a weeks-long delay, France is finally to unveil its new economic stimulus programme today. What's in it?
Yeah, providing details of this 100 billion euro stimulus plan that focuses on public investment, subsidies and tax cuts. The plan earmarks 35 billion euros for making Europe's second largest economy more competitive, investment in transport and funds to encourage firms to relocate plants back to France, 30 billion euros for more environmentally friendly energies, 25 billion euros for supporting jobs. Tax cuts in there as well to try and support France's industrial, construction and transport sectors. The plan equates to 4% of GDP, more than any other major European economy as a percentage of GDP. President Macron, of course, is hoping the plan will return the economy to pre-crisis levels of activities by 2022 after suffering or expected to suffer the worst post-war recession this year. The estimate is for the French economy to contract by 11% this year. Remember, this money is on top of the broader 750 billion euro European Recovery Fund.
How do you think France has handled the economic crisis compared with the UK?
Well, listen, I think there have been some major challenges in France, as you've seen in the UK and elsewhere around the world. You've seen some aggressive measures put in place. The locking down of the economy was earlier than we saw in the UK. It was probably a little bit more extensive, and that has perhaps been benefiting France from the longer term repercussions that we've seen in the UK. And they've come through finally with a stimulus package. Obviously, being in Europe and being subject to that means there were other elements to focus on a more broader perspective than simply looking at France. So the stimulus package perhaps taken a little bit longer than anticipated, but it looks like to be in good shape. And perhaps more importantly is the fact that they've committed and drove the European Recovery Fund. The mutualisation of debt is a significant step to the cohesion of the European project. I think without that, there are real question marks about the fragmentation of Europe in the future. France has played a pivotal role in making sure that didn't happen.
And still struggling to sort of come to grips with the reason why so many stores are closing down in the UK, because I was in Bordeaux for a few days, weeks ago, and the main shopping street there was absolutely packed with shoppers. And although there were one or two shops showing closing down sales, most of the big stores were still open and doing brisk business.
I think there's been a real change. The reality is there's a lot less workers going to the office, certainly in the UK, than you see elsewhere in Europe. So those big city centres, those big shopping areas that required workers, that benefited from workers, that benefited from tourists, of obviously international tourism, that's been struggling. I think smaller town centres, holiday hotspots have done very well. So it's a mixed picture. But the reality is there was a structural change taking place in terms of the UK retail environment. It's you see elsewhere in the world, we're perhaps more progressed down that line, and we see lots of people, of course, moving to an online model. And even those who'd previously refused to adopt online shopping have been forced to do it during the course of the pandemic lockdown and have continued with that. So that means that many retailers have to adapt to the way in which consumers are demanding their products.
It hasn't got a lot to do with the rents as well, though, because I mean, a lot of the leading UK businesses, Arcadia for example, several others, have been complaining that they just can't afford the rent anymore.
Yeah, there's been a difficult backdrop for many retailers for a long time in the UK. You've got high rates of rent, you've got high rates of taxation, of course, and alongside that, you've got expensive labour costs. So you throw that all into the mix, and much less footfall. Footfall is still down 30% compared to where we were this time last year. And that means, of course, many retailers, as I say, will have to adapt their models.
OK, foreign exchanges, please.
Pound against dollar coming in at 1.33 this morning. Euro dollar 1.18. You're going to get €1.12 for your British pound this morning.
That's quite sensible for you today.
Makes a change, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. Talk to you tomorrow.
Enjoy your day.
Hank Potts and Barclays.
On FM and DAB Plus across the Côte d'Azur, on your phone and worldwide online. This is Riviera Radio with the latest local news for the south of France.
Sarah Lyster has the top stories across the Riviera.
A diver has been rescued by Crossmed in Porquerolles in the Var. The 54-year-old man got into difficulty 48 metres below the surface between Porquerolles and Porquerolles. The victim was airlifted to the Sainte-Anne Military Hospital in Toulon. In other news, two people have been injured after a vehicle crashed into the terrace of a bar restaurant in La Ciotta. The incident occurred at around 10 p.m. on Tuesday. The driver, a 16-year-old boy without a driving licence, was stopped by off-duty police officers from Marseille that were at the time having a drink on the terrace. An investigation has been opened to determine the exact circumstances. A mosquito control operation has been carried out in areas of central Nice after a suspected case of dengue fever. The regional health agency ordered the operation to control tiger mosquitoes, which are known to carry dengue fever, as well as other diseases such as yellow fever. Areas around Avenue de Pessica have been sprayed with insecticide to try to control the mosquitoes. Two new cases of COVID-19 have been reported in Monaco on Wednesday. Since Saturday, 17 people have been tested positive, with the number of residents affected by the coronavirus to date standing at 142. Four people are hospitalised, including two in intensive care, and 43 people are being cared for by the Home Monitoring Centre. The Nice tourist office on the Promenade des Anglais has been closed after a member of staff tested positive for COVID-19 on Wednesday. Staff members have been asked to self-isolate while awaiting test results, and the premises will be disinfected. The tourism hotline remains open, and the 24/7 touchscreen terminals are available, along with the website nicetourism.com. Meanwhile, the restaurant La Petite Maison in Nice has closed its doors after an employee tested positive for COVID-19 on Tuesday. All staff have been tested and contact cases notified, and the restaurant will remain closed while the management awaits test results. An Environmental Protection Federation in France has warned that French people are in their panic over the coronavirus are forgetting about the environmental damage caused by single-use masks. Now mandatory in many major cities in France, including Marseille and Nice, and more recently Lyon, 5% of French people admit that they have already thrown away or lost a mask on public roads. A complaint has been filed by infectious disease specialists against Professor Didier Raoult for his promotion of hydroxychloroquine as a treatment against COVID-19. The director of the University Hospital of Marseille is accused of having promoted hydroxychloroquine, a drug whose effectiveness is not proven to fight against the coronavirus. In recent months, several scientific studies have even pointed out its ineffectiveness or even the dangers of the drug against COVID-19. Two private properties in Cannes have been fined €2,500 by the city. Since the beginning of the summer, the two adjoining villages have been the scene of celebrations, with partygoers paid to go day and night to parties. The fines were issued following the authorities evacuating the premises in the summer. In national news, French Prime Minister Jean Castex is to unveil the government's measures to restart the French economy today. Ahead of today's announcement, in an interview with Le Figaro, Castex unveiled on Wednesday that the recovery plan of €100 billion will be in three parts. Firstly, €30 billion will be invested in green technologies, €35 billion will be devoted to making France more competitive and sovereign, and finally, €35 billion will be devoted to the social and territorial cohesion. This includes approximately €6 billion for the hospitals. Jean Castex also guarantees that no tax increase is on the agenda, saying that this was a mistake that was made in the last crisis in 2008 and it will not be repeated. The Prime Minister concluded that the recovery plan would only be fully effective if everyone plays the game. Finally, a record has been reached in the number of migrants crossing the English Channel in a single day. On Wednesday, 409 people, including young children, on board 27 boats were intercepted by the Border Force. A further 53 people were rescued by French authorities after getting into difficulties before reaching British waters.
Riviera Radio, Sports News.
Cycling Adam Yates of Great Britain is the new holder of the yellow jersey in the Tour de France after previous leader Julien Alaphilippe was handed a 20-second time penalty on stage 5 of the race. The Frenchman was penalised after TV images showed him being given a water bottle with 17.8 kilometres of the stage remaining. Under UCI rules, riders are not allowed to take on food or drink in the final 20 kilometres of a stage. Stage 5 was mainly uneventful and was won in a sprint finished by Wout van Aert of Belgium. Yates has a 3-second advantage over Primo Roglic at the top of the general classification, heading into stage 6 today, which is 191 kilometres between Letay and Mont Aiguille. The stage ends with a brutal climb, with the chance that a bad day for one of the leaders could scupper their overall chance on the tour. Tennis, top seed Novak Djokovic is through to the third round of the US Open after beating Carl Edmund of Great Britain in four sets. There were also second round wins for Alexander Zverev and David Goffin, while Cameron Norrie of Great Britain is also through to the third round of a Grand Slam for the first time in his career. In the women's event, the top seed Karolina Pliskova has been knocked out by Caroline Garcia of France, who came through 6-1, 7-6. There were no problems, however, with the fourth seed Naomi Osaka, sixth seed Petra Kvitova, or the 13th seed Alison Risk, also all through to the next rounds. Football, the Wales star Gareth Bale has said he would be open to a move back to the English Premier League, but the current club Real Madrid are making it difficult for him to leave. The 31-year-old has been frustrated by lack of action at the Spanish giants and almost moved to China last year before Real blocked the move. Bale said he still had a lot to give, feels very fit and just wants to play. Several clubs have expressed an interest, but so far Real Madrid have rebuffed all comers. We'll have him.
Bet you will.
Yeah. He fits in very nicely in the Chelsea midfield, I think. Here's more football from BBC Sports.
BBC Premier League update from the home of Premier League football.
Hello from Colm Harrison at the BBC Sports Centre. Manchester United have completed the signing of the Dutch midfielder Donny van de Beek from Ajax. The fee is $47 million plus another $7 million in potential add-ons. 23-year-old van de Beek scored 41 goals in 175 games for Ajax. The Tottenham midfielder Eric Dier admits there's a certain way that he should carry himself. It's thought he was referring to an incident earlier in the year when he climbed into the stands to confront a fan. Dier was banned for four matches and fined more than $50,000 for the incident, which came after Spurs FA Cup defeat against Norwich in March. It's believed the fan in question was involved in an argument with Dier's brother. Well, the player himself was speaking to the BBC whilst on international duty with England ahead of Saturday's Nations League qualifier in Iceland.
People have asked me about the stand incident and there'll be a time where I'll talk about it, but it won't be while I'm playing in England. So I try and carry myself in the way I see best as a person. You know, I've grown up and, you know, educated to act in a certain way and carry myself in a certain way. And it's irrelevant where I am or who I'm representing. I just believe there's a way in which I should carry myself.
Everton have agreed a deal with Watford for their French midfielder Abdoulaye Doucouré. It could be worth up to $34 million. Everton tried to sign the player last year, but Watford refused to sell. That position changed, though, with their relegation from the Premier League at the end of the season. Doucouré has agreed a four-year contract. For more football news from the BBC, go to bbc.com/football.
BBC Premier League update from the home of Premier League football.
Cricket's the former England all-rounder David Cable has died at the age of 57 after a long illness. Cable won 15 caps and played in 23 one-day internationals between 1987 and 1990. He'd been suffering with a brain tumour. Finally, rugby union, up to 20,000 fans could be allowed to attend the England against Barbarians game at Twickenham on the 25th of October. Less than a quarter of the stadium's capacity would be reached under the proposal from the English RFU, which still needs to obtain clearance, including the relevant licence and approvals. A number of safety measures to prevent the spread of the coronavirus inside the stadium are being put together, including digital ticketing and the wearing of face masks, except for in assigned seats or when eating or drinking.
The weather forecast, brought to you by Oyster, the world's finest blue water sailing yachts. Oyster Yachts, beyond expectation.
For coastal areas up to 20 miles offshore the Almarazim and the VAR, the general situation, weak high pressure, 1,020 to 1,023 millibars across the region. Winds are variable, force 1 to 3, the sea is calm, visibility is good. Barometric pressure at Saint-Jean-Cap-Ferrat, 1,016 millibars. And the outlook for Friday, clear skies, force 1 to 3 variable winds, calm seas and good visibility. For North Corsica, winds are variable or westerly, force 2 to 4, the sea is slight, visibility is good. Barometric pressure at Cap Corse, 1,017 millibars. And the outlook for Friday, clear skies, force 1 to 3 variable winds, calm seas and good visibility.
The weather forecast, brought to you by Oyster, the world's finest blue water sailing yachts. Oyster Yachts, beyond expectation.
Riviera Radio, weather.
Clear skies today, a light southeasterly winds, temperatures 26 degrees this afternoon. Overnight lows 19 degrees on the coast, 17 degrees inland with clear skies. Friday and the start of the weekend, clear skies with highs of 26 to 28 degrees. Finally.
You'll remember the days of being sitting in a car park in a car with a packet of Walker's crisps and a Pepsi whilst your parents were maybe in the pub.
They used to sit outside the pub. They never used to make us sit in the car, well, I suppose, unless it was raining.
Well, yes, more often than not. Families have been left furious after a pub in the UK has banned all children from, under 12 to stop the boozer from turning into a creche. Pub landlady Lucy Draper announced a new policy on the Facebook page. The viral post has divided customers on whether or not it was the right thing to do. Youngsters are banned from coming into the Southampton pub except during Sunday lunchtimes. Hundreds of parents have now branded the policy as inconsiderate and ridiculous as they vowed to take their business somewhere else. However, opinion was divided as some customers defended the decision, saying adults can finally have a relaxing meal. So what do you think?
Well, I think there's just a vast difference, isn't there, between French and British culture. Because in France, children are tolerated everywhere.
Yeah, but you don't see many of them in bar tabacs, do you? Which is probably the equivalent. They don't have pubs in France.
We've seen a few.
What, children in bar tabacs?
Yeah, sitting in the corner smoking a shit ton. No, but I mean, well, I suppose we have a sort of real outdoor culture as well because of the weather,
yeah,
which helps. But if you go to a restaurant or a brasserie or something, there's always lots of children around.
Yeah, no, completely.
Whereas in England, I mean, yeah, there are some family-friendly pubs, but there are some definitely family-unfriendly pubs.
Well, yeah, went a bit too much one
just
way.
Just a couple of blokes at the bar nursing a pint of this.
Yeah, that's what I like.
Mumbling into their beards.
No kids running around. Yeah. Forget it.